Asri Report on Sabah al-Muslim.
Morning, Angelo. Thank you for joining us.
Assalamu alaikum to you and to your listeners.
Thank you for your time. On Heritage Day, 27 years into the post-apartheid republic's existence, we may need to reflect on the health of our democratic institutions. This is particularly crucial given that we are now just 5 weeks away from local government elections. What do the events of the past week tell us about the state of democracy in South Africa?
Well, we know that we have strong institutions on paper. But the problem is that human fallibility compromises people's ability to do what these institutions require us to do. Njabulo Ndebele spoke about how we tend to focus endlessly on corrupt officials, and we replace one set of corrupt officials with other officials, and we never ask, what is it that makes corruptibility possible? So what we've seen over the last week is more evidence and more concerns and complaints around how the executive arm of government at all three tiers is marred by corruption and maladministration. This is at national level, provincial level, and at municipal level. And it's at the municipal level that I think most people experience the coalface of this corruption, which is what makes these local government elections so important. The judiciary has also come under attack because partly what we've seen is external attacks on them. So people critiquing the courts in ways that don't actually engage with legal processes, but makes it about personalities and individuals and impugns the independence of the judiciary to interpret the law in favor of their particular candidate or their preferred accused. We've seen that the legislatures have failed to hold the executive to account, which is partly why so much of this corruption, particularly around the COVID-19 PPE issues, are a spectacular there. And then what I think we also need to bear in mind is that the executive itself has been implicated in corruption and has not been held accountable as fully as it could have by these legislatures. The outgoing Chief Justice Mokgweng Mokgweng has made statements that I think has brought him into some kind of conflict with some of his colleagues. Judge Slope, his remarks have also brought all sorts of issues to the fore. Beyond these three arms of government and the three tiers of government, of course, there is the political party system. So these organizations are crucial to the post-apartheid democratic process. But what we've seen is increasingly kind of what gets mistaken for populist politics, but is actually right-wing politics, which is this appeal to people's basest instincts by using xenophobic rhetoric peddled as solutions to problems that are not at all related to the presence of people who are not South African in South Africa. This might be people's commonsensical conception, but the research simply does not bear this out. The IEC itself may have to clean up house, and not just ahead of this election, but once this election is run and should it be declared free and fair, what we will need to have is some kind of reflection on the part of the IEC of all of those mistakes, poor judgments that brought us to this particular moment where they went to court instead of to parliament to get what they wanted to have, and to clean up that process long before the 2024 general election. The kind of constitutional crises that we have avoided this year is not one that we can continue to test ourselves on. The inertia and complacency that led to the court processes run by the IEC, that has to be avoided in future. And then what we'll have to have is an increase in critical literate education so that the kind of rhetoric that politicians and political parties resort to manipulate people's emotions when their reason should determine their political behavior, that I think can be stemmed in future.
Yes, now talking about the IEC has, however, run a reasonably successful voter registration weekend, adding 1.7 million people to the voter roll. Does this bode well for the polls?
I think it is an important achievement that we shouldn't just, you know, brush aside. But it should be noted that there is still a substantial skewing of who registers when we look at the age profiles. This is a majority young country. The majority of people who live here at the moment are under 35. They're going to live into the second half of the century. This country, this society, like many other societies on the African continent, has a skewed representation in politics. So the majority of our politicians are actually not under 35. They're often over 50. Most of the cabinet members are over 60. And these are people who are not going to see the second half of the century, however, you know, much medical intervention you might want to wish for yourself. I'm not going to see the second half of the century. So it's very, very dangerous when the majority of the population is not engaged in the formal political process. Because however contemptible they may find politics and however poorly political parties may be appealing to young people, it's important for young people to realize that they need to be involved in this process, because the political elite currently in power will determine the conditions under which they will live in the second half of the century. And so we need more than those 1.7 million votes to get stuck into politics. We have, among other things, current crises of economic down spiraling, unemployment. But there are bigger challenges ahead, which include the climate catastrophe currently unfolding around us. And as scientists have told us, warned us for 30, 35 years, this will lead to political instability, to conflict, particularly around food and water shortages. We already sit with a situation where one in 122 people currently alive on the planet today is a migrant or an internally displaced person of some sort. This is going to become far more widespread as the climate catastrophe unfolds. And so we'll need to have a politics in the second half of the 21st century that actually engages with the realities of a hotter, more hostile planet. And as a result, I think it's important for young people to be involved in political agitation and to make sure that the political organizations that are dominant in their sort of polity, in their society, represent their interests and not just the interests of the elderly who are currently in government.
As it stands, you know, with what he said, is there then any cause for hope as we reflect on the present and the future on this Heritage Day?
I think hope is central to all our lives. And whether you're a religious or a non-religious person, our resilience comes from hope. We hope for a better tomorrow. We hope for jobs. We hope for better lives for our children. We hope that our children and that ourselves, that we do well. Despair is not something that our forebears in this part of the world have bequeathed us. Think of the word struggle. Struggle is so crucial to people's lives here. And I don't just mean the struggle against colonial exploitation and violation or the struggle against apartheid. But I'm talking here about the everyday struggle against poverty, against exploitation in communities, the struggle against violence and dehumanization. And this is a legacy that South Africans really can claim, and can claim positively, and not just from the previous century, not just, you know, from the previous millennium, but from our life over the last, shall we say, 18 to 20 months. Our victories against the desperate, really despairing, causing events of the Life of Sidibeni tragedy, the fact that journalists, advocates, NGOs got involved, that ordinary people got involved and fought for the rights of the survivors and the families of those who died in that tragedy. The ways in which, despite the many, many failures we have in government and its delivery and its meeting the needs of people, there is still agitation. The successes of our past include the fight for ARV treatment for HIV/AIDS patients, norms and standards introduced into schools, the reversal of forced removals, landlessness, women's rights. These were all fought for. They were not gifted by government, even though government may claim that these are their achievements. They're really the achievements of ordinary people arguing, fighting, agitating, protesting in communities, in organizations. This is a heritage we need to build on. This is the heritage that we saw in those community action networks which assisted millions during the privations of the 2020 lockdown, given the pandemic. And the insistence on joyful living, which we see millions of people displaying when they queue to get vaccinated, as they sing, as they dance, as they post images of themselves getting jabbed. These are signs of hope and inspiration that I think indicate to us that it's we who, as a people who live here now, can make things better. And this, despite the obstacles that government puts in the place, precisely through corruption and maladministration, and despite political parties' inertia by not addressing ordinary people's wants and desires, but speaking to their own interests and the self-interested desire for power that they have. And so there's much that I think lies there that we can use to give us hope and to give us strength to realize that we're not powerless and that we have a history of victories in our past, in our present, that can help us build a better future.
Certainly a powerful message for us to reflect on. Angelo, thank you for your time this morning. Have a lovely day.
Jazakallah, and to you as well.
Kamal Pabaya. That was Angelo Fick for the weekly edition of the Asri Report, reflecting on a number of things on this public holiday, which is Heritage Day.